Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. Spectators can find event info such as start times, race routes, and where to watch, as well as volunteer opportunities at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. We've had some late heat. We've had lots of rain, but fall is definitely here. It may be a little too early to tell how spectacular fall color will be this year, but it's always beautiful. And DNR Forester Mark Vitosh is here with us today to talk about it. So early indications, Mark, what do you think?
Well, good morning, by the way.
Good morning.
Early indications... You know, every year, I think, over the last 5 to 8 years, our theme has been kind of depends on the weather. And, you know, we got really wet early in the spring. And then in some places, we kind of got dry. And then we got wet again. So when you have a lot of those extremes, sometimes that color just kind of gets washed out for different reasons. I can tell you on a species like black walnut, we have a disease called anthracnose, and because of that wet spring, a lot of those leaves are kind of trying to turn yellow, but a lot of them started to fall kind of early and stuff, so that had an impact. And as we always talk about, depending on what colors you're looking at and stuff, the weather we're going to have over the next 3 to 4 weeks is really going to impact the vibrancy, how long it's going to last, and those kind of things are really, especially when you start talking about a lot of the reds and those really purple colors and stuff, a lot of those, and we can talk about it more in detail, but the pigments, those colors that are produced are actually impacted by the weather now. And so today is actually a great day for fall color. Very clear day, not a lot of clouds, and cool night. That's especially for those reds and purples. There's a pigment called anthocyan, and those are actually produced later in the season, this time of year. So during the day, as that tree and plant is going through photosynthesis, a lot of sugars are produced. And at night, as it gets cooler, a lot of those sugars get trapped in the leaf. And if you have a really clear day, you get more production of that. Well, those sugars actually help in the production of these anthocyans that produce that vibrant color. So if we have more clear days and cool nights, the potential for that is greater. So last week was not good for fall color, but depending, you know, looking at the temperatures and stuff over the next week or so, it looks like things are going to start getting cooler. The thing with fall color is it happens every year, because our day lengths get shorter. And being in the Midwest, we know that our trees are going to go dormant. So that process is always going to happen. But when and how it happens usually becomes somewhat dependent. If we stay really dry, it stays warmer. Sometimes we've had fall color into Halloween. So again, usually it's kind of middle of October, plus or minus 10 days on either side, depending on where you live.
Right. And then, of course, large weather events can change everything. If we have beautiful fall color and things have changed and it's been gorgeous and then we have one big storm, it's all over.
Right. If you have, you know, people used to think that frost is what actually triggered fall color. But frost can actually shut that down, because you have to remember that this whole process is a living process and frost kills. So frost will shut it down. Now, with that said, if you have a light frost, a lot of times, again, depending on where you're at, how hard it is, it may not completely shut things down. But then if you also have some of the weather that we had in the last week or so, here in the next couple of weeks, if we have some really heavy rains, winds, that tends to cause the leaves to fall off and blow off too. So like you said, you can have just a great day, and then the next day you can go, what happened? And that's why if you want to see fall color, it's always, and I say this every year, but be prepared to leave tomorrow. Because someone will tell you, hey, we were up in Northeast Iowa and the color is just beautiful. Well,
go.
Take the day off, get up there. And sometimes, you know, you wish it lasted longer, But if you think about it, it's kind of like spring flowers too, like the crab apples. We see how beautiful they are, but a lot of times they only last 1 to 2 weeks. And if you get the right conditions, sometimes they shut off too. So fall color is kind of that way too, very weather dependent.
All right. So remind us, why do trees do this, Mark?
Well, trees don't die. Some people think their trees are dying and that's why they shut down. But again, living in the Midwest, trees cannot keep their leaves all winter long. Leaves do not do well in minus 20 degrees like we had last winter. So trees basically, as the day length shortens and our nighttime increases, they're going through photosynthesis, but they use the cell called chlorophyll. Chlorophyll is that green pigment that we see, and that's why we see that green color. And as that tree goes through photosynthesis, basically the sun hits those leaves, gives them energy, and they take the water that comes up through the plant and the carbon dioxide that comes in through their stomates, these little holes underneath the leaf, and they go through photosynthesis. During that process, they convert that material to carbohydrates in the form of sugars and starches. But as those days get shorter, the production of chlorophyll starts to get reduced, and the tree kind of stops producing that. The other thing that happens is there's a little petiole between the leaf and the stem, and that is the highway for nutrients, water, everything that plant needs for life. Well, a corky layer called an abscission layer, as those day lengths shorten, actually starts to develop, and it disallows the movement of water and nutrients up and down and slows down that chlorophyll. Well, as the chlorophyll disappears, there's other pigments, especially the yellows called carotenes or carotenoids. Those have been there all year. They're kind of hunched over underneath the chlorophyll. They're masked by the chlorophyll all season. But as that chlorophyll dissipates, then we start to see the yellows and oranges. Again, the leaf is full of pigments, all kinds of different colors, but depending on the growing season, the time of year, some of those colors are masked. And in this case, as the chlorophyll starts to dissipate, we start to see those yellows and oranges. And that tree is basically shutting down for winter, and it's taking those sugars and that other material and converting it back into the tree for storage for the winter and also for next spring.
So the beauty of the display doesn't really have anything to do with the health of the tree. That's just kind of a fun byproduct for us.
Actually, the beauty can have something to do related to the health of a tree in a couple different ways. When a lot of times, if you notice in parking lots and places like that, 3 weeks ago, and even in August, when it was we're talking, hey, it's kind of dry, mm-hmm. you know. And
yeah, that's hard to remember, right?
Yeah, it's hard to remember. But if you thought about it, there was trees changing fall color, especially in parking lots and areas in tree pits and places that where their root zones and stuff aren't as big, and those trees were stressed. So they were actually shutting down early. But because of that, we saw some fall color.
Early color can mean stress.
So early color can mean stress. I mean, even the stuff that I'm still seeing now, I mean, we're, you know, in our road ditches and stuff, all that's pretty normal. Some of the fall color, the sumac, that's the stuff we first see, the cottonwoods, the willows, the ash, that's all normal. But if you look around in parking lots and stuff, you're still seeing maybe some of the sugar maples that normally wouldn't turn fall color till mid-October, late October. Some of those trees are stressed. Red maple, they're showing. But the weather, if you have really dry situations, that is a stress overall, and that can affect the quality of the fall color. In years that we've had really dry conditions, sometimes those leaves try to change, but they just turn kind of a brown or yellow and just kind of fade out. So their health can be impacted or can impact the vibrancy of that color too.
Interesting.
Yes.
So if you have a particularly beautiful display in your yard, though, that doesn't necessarily, I mean, not an early display, but particularly stunning.
Right.
That isn't an indicator?
No. I mean, if you have a really vibrant display and it's really good this year, it just means the weather conditions that impact the quality were good that year. The other thing that's kind of interesting, you can, if you have a street light around your tree, that one side can be more vibrant than the other.
Oh, interesting.
Because you're getting more light to that tree. So there's more exposure to that, so you can get more production of those sugars. So even one side over the other could look a little different. But again, the weather has a big impact.
So you mentioned some of the trees that we're seeing now. Sumacs are red and really vibrant red. But most of what we're seeing early are the yellows. Tell me a little bit about how the color develops over the season.
Okay. So in most cases, I mean, and I think it's not really by the colors. It's kind of by the species. Your walnuts tend not to hold their leaves as long. So this time of year, you see the yellows of the walnuts. The cottonwoods, the ash, even silver maple, those are species that just tend to turn earlier, and those just happen to be yellow. And some of the reds you will get is the sumac, which is actually a shrub, but that tends to be one of the first things that goes in the road ditches. Along with that, another kind of purplish color is the dogwoods. Some of the native shrub dogwoods right now are just starting to turn. But some of your real vibrant reds, let's like say the red oaks, they tend to come, and oaks in general, they just tend to hold their leaves a lot longer before they start, and they're kind of that at kind of the end. In the middle is like the sugar maples. The sugar maples where you get kind of the oranges and the yellows, so you get a mixture of the carotenoids. You get some anthocyanins in there, so you get quite a mixture. So there's just, it's more species related, but, and some of those too are kind of bottomland. Some of those bottomland species, silver maple, cottonwood, ash, willows tend to go first, and more of your upland species, a little drier conditions in general, some of those species tend to come later.
All right. And if you want to get an idea of what's going on in different parts of the state, the DNR website is a great place to go, iowadnr.gov, and search for fall color. You will find the page with frequent updates about fall color. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with me, DNR forester Mark Vitosh, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist, is joining us in a moment. They are here to answer your questions about plants and trees. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, DNR forester Mark Vitosh. And Richard Giron is here, Iowa State University Extension horticulture specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Are things starting to change a little bit in central Iowa?
Just a little bit. Maybe a little bit of kind of a dark purple on the white ash, a little bit of yellow on the honey locust, and a little bit of maroon on the Freeman maples. But still, it's kind of behind schedule.
Yeah, it's a little early yet around here as well. You can join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And in addition to a question, if you also want to tell us where your favorite place is to see fall color, we'd love to hear that as well. 866-780-9100. Carol is on the line in Norwalk. Hi, Carol.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. What's your question?
So what my question is, we had a couple of weeks ago, one of our trees was struck by lightning, and we lost a large branch. It left about a 15-inch in diameter exposure, took out about a quarter of the tree. And what we're wondering is will that tree make it through that event, or do we need to do anything to prevent any disease or anything like that from happening?
So, Carol, what kind of tree was it?
I knew you were going to ask that. It's a deciduous tree.
Okay.
I don't know exactly the type of it, but it has like a small white flower in the springtime that produces just a really small type of a berry, but maybe the berry is like a quarter of an inch or so.
Okay.
Does it
turn purple fall color?
It does.
Sounds like an ornamental pear, maybe. Is it kind of a round-shaped tree?
No, not really round. Uh-uh.
Okay. Still,
yes.
But, or it could be a crabapple. So the bottom line is with lightning strikes, it really depends on how hot that strike was, what the moisture content in the tree was at the time and stuff. I mean, a lightning strike alone could eventually kill that tree. A lot of times they won't necessarily die right away. It may be even a year or so before you know for sure. And it may be, if nothing browns up this year, that's a good sign. If it's really hot, sometimes you'll actually see some dieback even in the time that within a few weeks after it being striked, you might see some dead branches. If you haven't seen that yet, that's a good sign. But you're going to have to wait till next year to really see the impact. As far as the wound, a 15-inch wound is huge. If they cleaned it up and kind of took care of it, that's all you can really do. You can't put any kind of paint or wound dressing on it. That's actually going to promote decay even more. The only thing to look for is if there's any major cracks in the tree or anything like that, then you would start to worry about the integrity of the tree. But it's going to be one of those. It's going to be more of a waiting game. And then long term, you're going to want to watch that wound for decay and problems like that. And if it starts to become decayed, you can't stop that, but then you have to have it evaluated to see if the structure of that tree is still okay. So it's going to be kind of a waiting game.
All right. Carol, thanks so much for your call, and I hope the wait is fruitful. Let's go to Rick next in Waukee. Hi, Rick.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
In our neighborhood, there's quite a few lilacs, and almost all of them are losing their leaves. And some of them are blooming, and including in my yard, they don't look healthy. They look like they're not doing well at all.
Right. That's been a common thing this late summer and fall. We've been seeing that since, I would say, late August, early September. I'm pretty sure there's a fungal disease involved in that. As far as the bloom, I think what happened was that the dry August put the plants under stress, and the actual flower buds actually form early to midsummer, and so they were present. And then because they were under stress, and then we had warm temperatures in September, abundant rainfall, and that kind of encouraged the plant to go ahead and maybe resume growth, and some of those flower buds basically broke, and they bloomed. So you see that periodically on lilacs. And I also saw some on campus on a viburnum. So it does happen on occasion.
I actually saw some magnolias 2 days ago, Richard, that had bloomed too.
Wow.
So
yeah.
I have a lilac in my backyard, and it did the same thing. It's actually re-leafing right now. It defoliated enough that it actually lost enough leaves that it's actually putting on new leaves.
So you think they're still alive and they'll survive next year then?
I think there's a good chance they will. I can't guarantee that, but I think there's a good chance. A number of samples were sent into our plant diagnostic clinic, and they found a number of different things, but I think in most cases the plants will come back.
The other thing, Rick, if you can just scrape the branches and you see a little bit of green underneath your thumbnail, that's a good sign. And then if the buds still are intact, that's usually a good sign also.
All right, Rick, thanks a lot for your call. Let's do some email here. This is from Guinoa in Des Moines. I planted some fruit trees this spring, pears, peach, apricot, white mulberry. They're doing fine. I have not fertilized them, only added some compost. Should I do anything to prepare them for winter?
What I would do is I would take some hardware cloth and make a cylinder and place that around the trunk so the rabbits don't browse on them over the wintertime. At this point, there's no need to fertilize. I would not fertilize. They have adequate moisture. So basically, the main concern I have is rabbit browsing. So make sure they have some protection.
All right. And you should make that hardware cloth pretty high,
yes,
right?
Yes, at least 2 feet, two or three feet.
I would also make a small suggestion.
Sure.
Reevaluate the white mulberry. It's a non-native invasive species. It's also called Russian mulberry. We do, if they can find it, there is a native red mulberry. I would look at that alternative. I mean, that invasive plants are everywhere, so you can just say, well, they're everywhere, and I understand that. But if they want to reevaluate, they could consider trying to get a source for red mulberry, which is our native mulberry.
All right, and a couple follow-up questions. Should they prune those new trees this winter?
Absolutely not. If they need pruning, I would do that in late March, early April.
And when can they prune the lower branches of a maple tree?
Actually, you can do it in the wintertime, but we've actually started to change a little bit on our recommendations on non-oak species like maples, crab apples. Actually, a good time to do it is early summer, like mid-June or so is actually a good time because the research has shown you're going to get a better wound response. If they really want to do it, they can do it in the winter. They're not going to kill the tree or anything like that. But if they really want to promote good wound response, the other thing I would tell them, if they're lifting on a tree, on a new developing maple tree, they want to leave those lower branches till they get about an inch and then get them off before they're 2 inches, because those lower branches do actually help the function of that tree, help build up a very strong tree. And if we lift those branches when they're the size of our pinkies and too quickly, that actually robs some of that energy from the tree. So you want to do it slowly over time, but you want to get those branches before they get an inch and a half to 2 inches to minimize the wound.
All right. You can call with your questions, 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Here's a question for you, Richard, from Susan and Jewel. No matter when you plant the classic blue morning glories, whether it's in early spring or throughout the summer, do they only bloom late summer into fall? Mine seem to only bloom in early fall.
Well, basically, it's an annual plant, and for the most part, in the spring and early summer, they're just growing vegetatively. And so it's basically going to be late summer, early fall before they bloom.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Ryan is on the line in Cedar Falls. Hi, Ryan.
Hi. I'm actually building an addition onto my house, and they're going to be doing some excavation for a foundation about 12 feet away from a giant bur oak tree. And I'm wondering if that's going to survive, if I need to have it removed. That's
a great question, Ryan. And so what we tend to do, if you're going to be with inside the drip line of the tree, which is actually the edge of the branches, there is going to be potential for damage. And the farther you go into that zone, the more potential that you're going to have damage. And a lot of it just depends on how much of that root zone you're going to damage. If you can keep it below, say, 20 to 25% of that area, that would minimize the damage, but it could still cause damage. The challenge with trees is, especially with that kind of activity, you don't see the damage right away. Often that tree can live off reserves for a couple years, but if it's damaged, it could actually start to decline 3 to 4 years or even 5 to 6 years after that damage, and they usually decline from the top down. The one thing I would do is I would measure the trunk of that tree about 4.5 feet above ground and get the diameter and measure that diameter times 1.5, and that's the protection of radial protection that you want. So for example, let's just say it was 20 inches. If my calculations are right, that's 35. So that would be 35 feet. So you'd want 35 feet of radial protection all the way around that tree, which would be 70 feet in diameter. So the more protection area, and then think about how much are we going to get into that. If you're going to get a lot of that, you may have to consider removal.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. So, Mark, before we let Ryan go, if you...
Actually, I was incorrect. It'd be 30 feet.
Okay.
Not 35.
Okay. But if you were building an addition onto your house and you were building a crawl space near an oak tree, what would you do? Would you just kind of wait it out to see what happens, or would you think about taking out the tree?
Well, the thing you need to think about is if you could wait to see, you know, if you stay to that and you minimize damage, that tree could survive. But the other thing you need to think about is if you're putting an addition on, and then once that addition's there, it's going to be much more difficult to remove that tree, then that's where you could run into some trouble. But if there's enough room to be able to take that tree down later safely and stuff, and not at some extreme extra cost, you could wait. The other thing is, if you're going to do that, then you want to keep all the construction in the construction area. And I talked about that protection zone. So let's say you want to be 30 feet from the trunk, but you could only, you said you're going to be in the 10 feet. But if you have everywhere else around it is open and not going to be damaged, mm-hmm. you would want to fence that area off and not allow equipment and stuff to drive over that. Don't let them pile dirt around it. So protect the rest of the remaining area that's not going to be impacted. And that's going to help reduce the impact on that tree. So it's going to give it a better chance. And usually within 3 to 5 years, you're going to know if it's going to start to decline. But what happens sometimes, too, that tree compensates. It dies back a little bit. And then that dieback stops because it compensated for that loss. And then you still may have a tree left. So you got to have to kind of weigh those things. Right. But again,
a bit of a gamble.
Even though if you're going 10 feet, if you have a lot of root zone in other areas. And the other thing is, as they're digging, if they're not getting into a lot of roots in that particular area, they may not be causing as much damage to that tree. So,
all right. Good luck, Ryan. Thanks for your call. Next up, Chris in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What's your question?
So this was our first year living in a house, and we put a garden in, some tomatoes and peppers, and just a kind of a standard garden. Then midway through the summer, we've noticed that kind of going east to west, our tomatoes first started wilting like they were drying out, but we were giving them plenty of water. Doing some research online, looked like that in the neighbor's yard, there was a walnut tree that was too close to the garden and kind of maybe causing that to wilt. So just wanted to know if there was anything that we could do to prevent that short of moving the garden somewhere else.
Well, as far as the location of the walnut, how close is it to the garden?
Hang on, here you are.
20 to 25 feet.
I'm guessing it may not be the walnut. It could also be a vascular wilt, like fusarium wilt, verticillium wilt. These are organisms that live in the soil. They affect a number of different plants. They enter through the roots. And basically what they do over time is they block the flow of water from the roots to the actual foliage. And so the plant begins to wilt. And initially, it may wilt during the heat of the afternoon, but by the next morning look fine. But over time, it blocks more and more water, so eventually the plant wilts and eventually dies. So it could be that, and there's no way to prevent that. Most of the hybrid varieties have resistance to those things, but they're not immune. They can still get it. So you probably can't do much, but I would put the tomatoes in a different location if I could next year and see how they do.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Chris. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Dave has this question from Mason City. I'd like to plant the soft neck variety of garlic this fall. I'm an avid gardener, but this would be my first experience growing garlic. Can you offer any basic suggestions on when to plant, soil preparation, mulching for winter protection, and other considerations for first-timers?
I would plant it in October, sometime in the next week or two. Basically, just kind of like you're planting an onion, maybe an inch or so deep. And then I would cover that with several inches of straw later on this fall.
All right. And this one's for you, Mark, from Roy in Lime Springs. Why do the leaves stay on longer in New England? I've been out there at Thanksgiving and they still have beautiful colors.
That's a great question. A lot of that, though, in those areas, if they don't have the heavy frost, then that's going to stretch that out. And and I'm not sure exactly about the weather there, but my guess would be where they are in locations, if that frost is a little later and they don't have those killing frosts, then it stretches that out.
Right, and it probably depends on year to year.
Right.
And their early cold temperatures don't tend to be as cold as ours because of the moderating influence of a giant body of water,
That's
right?
what I was thinking. So they may be protected enough that that extends that.
All right. Good theorizing.
Yes.
Yep. From Marlene, what time of year should a pin oak be treated for chlorosis with systemic iron implants?
In most cases, they've had best success doing that in the spring.
All right. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer more of your questions about plants and trees. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. And if you're on Twitter, I did share a link from my Twitter feed at Charity Nebbe to the DNR page where you can find all of the information you need to find the best fall color around the state of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. Spectators can find event info such as start times, race routes, and where to watch, as well as volunteer opportunities at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, DNR Forester Mark Vitosh and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Next up, we've got Steve on the line in the Quad Cities. Hi, Steve.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about, I have two Japanese maples that are just spectacular, but they really were stressed this spring. I'm hoping it's from the hard winter. I notice in the neighborhood a lot of them are stressed, or some of the smaller ones have died. One's a red and one's a green. They're side by side. The green one with a northwest exposure is the one that's most stressed. I had an arborist look at it and said there it could be stressed, but it also shows signs of root girdling, and suggested I blow it out and cut out some of those roots. I hate to do that because of the plantings around it. But my question is, I've trimmed a lot of dead out of it. It's recovered a little bit during the summer months, but it did not produce any seeds this year, any of the seedlings. And my question is then, is it stress? Is it root girdling? Or you know, help me out here.
I think it could be all of the above, Steve. I will definitely tell you that the winter was very tough, especially on Japanese maple, burning bush euonymus, a number of species that, as far as hardiness, might be a little questionable. The thing with the stem girdling roots, the thing you can do, you don't necessarily have to blow out all the soil, but just pull the soil away from the trunk. And a lot of times, if they're stem girdling roots, they'll be in that area immediately around the trunk, usually within the first 5 to 6 inches below. So pull that away. Since those are smaller trees, if there are smaller roots that are actually growing around, and that's a smaller tree, you may be able to do some pruning. But if the roots are, you know, 2 to 3, 4 inches in diameter, and that's an you know, a big part of the tree, that's going to cause damage. But if you do find some smaller strapping roots growing around that stem, it's usually right below the surface. And if they're smaller, you could prune a few of those off to try to help it. But again, I think it could be a combination. It definitely the winter had impact on those maples this year.
Would that affect the fact it has not produced any seedlings this fall, which is really unusual? And I know we had a really late frost, and perhaps that was it. And so that
when
and
you say secondly, seedlings, it
can
normally
I wait till spring.
So it normally produces a lot of little sprouts coming up around. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you know the little helicopters.
Oh,
little,
the actual
Japanese
seeds themselves.
Produce.
Yeah.
None. There's none on the tree this year.
Here's the thing to think about. We had a cool, moist spring also. And so depending on when those flower structures were out, the weather can have an impact on that production. So that doesn't necessarily have an impact from stress, but the weather itself, as those seeds set, can have an impact on not having that production. What it basically means is they could have produced flowers, but they just didn't get to seed. And on a lot of plants, that can vary from year to year. You may have certain plants that just show it every year, but in most cases, that can fluctuate from year to year.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Steve. Here's an email question. This is from another Steve in Mason City. I'm looking for guidance for the care of woody perennial herbs that I'm bringing inside for the winter.
Boy, that's rather generic. I guess what I would do is bring it inside, put it in a sunny window, water it sparingly, keep it on the dry side, and see how they do. But it's kind of a difficult to answer, not knowing exactly what they're talking about.
Right. So if you have specific questions, Steve, you can get back in touch with us. You can also email questions to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Michelle in Iowa City says, last year I planted two holly bushes on the south side of my house. The winter was pretty rough on them, and I lost a lot of branches on one of them. This year I've bought a third holly to plant near the others and wonder what kind of winter protection you would recommend. Should I consider replacing the damaged plant, which is pretty lopsided?
I would give it a chance to recover. And as far as protection, possibly what they might want to do, I'm assuming they have an evergreen type holly, not a deciduous type. And so what they might possibly do is try to keep off the sun and wind, which can dry out the foliage. And they can do that by putting some fencing around it and then maybe attaching burlap to that, so that basically you're shading the plant and keeping the wind off the plant.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Dallas is on the line. Hi, Dallas.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is, I work for Mort's Water Company over in Latimer, Iowa, and we do a lot of drain work. I've got a couple questions. One is, you said an oak tree, its roots grow 75 feet around the tree. Is that typical for most trees, like an elm or trees like that?
Well, actually, Dallas, what I defining is tree roots can go well beyond the edge of the branches.
Okay.
And most tree species have the majority of their absorbing roots are in the top 2 feet of the soil. So if we're doing stuff around those trees, even in general, if you can stay outside what we call the drip line, the edge of the branches, that's going to help. But on large trees, those roots can go well beyond. So any impact in those areas could have an impact on those trees, be it adding soil, cutting roots, those kind of things. And a lot of it comes down to how much of that root area is damaged. Even if we impact areas around and change the drainage to that tree over time, those things long-term can have an impact. But the bottom line is those tree roots, depending on the tree, can go well beyond the edge of the branches on almost any species.
Okay. My other question would be, after a tree has been taken down, on an average, typically how long does it take for the roots to stop growing? In our case, they grow into a tile is what they do.
Right, right. In most cases... Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. So if you cut the tree off, how long are those? Is that the bottom line is eventually if that tree doesn't, if the top is not producing leaves, eventually it's not going to get enough nutrients to keep, that tree's going to need some leaves. So within a year or two, those roots should die.
On all trees.
On most trees, yeah. I mean,
most trees.
Again,
yep.
if they're not resprouting, the thing is, if they're allowed to resprout and there's just sprouts, they can live for a long time. But if they're not producing leaves at some point, eventually that tree's going to die.
Right, due to the photosynthesis.
Yeah, yep.
Yep, yep. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. Chad is up next in Waterloo. Hi, Chad.
Hi, got a question. My neighbor has a prolific raspberry bush, black raspberry, and they have a lot of little babies coming off the ground, and they want to give me some transplant. When's a good time? When they're green? When they're dying?
Right. The best time would be early next spring, probably sometime around early to mid-April, before the plants begin to leaf out. Go ahead and dig those up, and then at that point replant. And when you do that, cut back the existing cane back to, let's say, 6 or 8 inches in length, because you do not want it to produce fruit that first year. That first year needs to be to get the plant established and growing. So do it early in the spring and cut it back to like 6 to 8 inches.
Awesome. Can't wait for my raspberries.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Chad. Next, let's go to Mary in Perry. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
My grandchildren and I planted a maple, not a red maple. I think maybe it's a sugar maple, into a pot this spring, and they've been watching it grow all summer. Is it too late? It's about 12 to 15 inches tall. Is it too late to plant that in the ground? They want to save that, or should I take it to the basement and keep it watered over the winter?
Is it outside now?
Yeah, it's been outside in a pot.
Yeah, I think it's actually, as long as you can take it out of that pot without disturbing that root system very much, put it in a place, put it where you want it to grow, and then put a cage around it. A cage that doesn't let the rabbits and mice get in there. So use chicken wire or something a little smaller cage size, but protect that. But, yeah, you're better off to let it do its thing outside, because if it's been outside all year, it's starting to prepare itself for winter. But you want to make sure that you protect it through the winter.
Okay. Thank you very much. Yeah. They'll be excited.
Good.
Thanks for your call, Mary. That's a great project. Tim is on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, Tim.
Hi. How are you guys?
Good. What's your question?
I have a question for Richard and one for Mark. Richard, I have a, pardon my pronunciation, Wajila. Wajila is in a corner foundation, and they've always done really well, flowered all summer and into the fall. But this year, I've had some of the branches, all the leaves have turned black. That's never happened before. I wondered if you had any idea what happened on some of the branches.
I'm not sure what's going on there. And it's probably too late to send a sample into the plant diagnostic clinic here at Iowa State. So I think I would just wait and see what happens next spring. And anything that doesn't leaf out, promptly remove. And if the symptoms reoccur, then I would send a sample to our plant diagnostic clinic at that point.
Okay, great. Thank you. And Mark, in your walks in the neighborhood, have you noticed how nice my sycamore tree looks this year?
It looks better than it did this spring.
I can't believe it. In 40 years here, that sycamore at this time of year has never looked that good. Those leaves are full and almost a brilliant green. I've not seen that before, like I said, in the 40 years here.
And I remember this spring there were so many calls about people thought that the sycamores were going to die because of sycamore anthracnose, and that's always a concern, and it was a concern. It was very damaging, but the majority of them did come back. I have seen a few scattered throughout different places that really took it hard and don't look very well, but most look very good, and that's great.
All right, Tim, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Deb in Marshalltown. Hi, Deb.
Hi, I have a question about ash trees and protecting them against ash borer.
Okay.
I'm wondering how many years you have to treat them every year, forever, or do they build up immunities?
That's a great question, Deb. So basically, depending on what chemical you use, there are chemicals that you can treat every 2 years. But the bottom line is you're going to have to treat that tree every 2 years. We don't know at this point at what point we may be able to reduce those treatments, but I would say at least for the next 10 years at a minimum, you're going to have to treat that tree 5 times. And probably beyond that, you're going to have to continue. We're still waiting from the research from Michigan and other places where it's come through to see if there's a point where you can start to slow that down. But I would say I would be willing you're going to have to be willing to commit at least for the next 10 years and probably beyond that to protect that tree. And
okay,
Iowa State has a good publication on the types of chemicals and when to treat and stuff for the emerald ash borer.
All right, Deb, thanks a lot. Next up, Ralph in Grinnell. Hi, Ralph.
Hi there. The ZNR buying acorns and hickory nuts and walnuts for planting for new trees down the road, or is that program not in existence anymore?
It's still in existence, Ralph, but it varies from year to year. And I usually get an email telling us what species they're looking to buy and stuff, and I have not received that. But if you call our State Forest Nursery, if you just Google Iowa DNR and State Forest Nursery, just give them a call. They're usually there from 8 to 4, 8 to 5. Give them a call, and they'll let you know if there's certain species that we're still buying.
All right. Thanks, Ralph. Ron's up next in Ottumwa. Hi, Ron.
Hello.
What's your question?
I'm wanting to move some cedar trees into my yard, and I was wondering what size I should look for. And knowing they just have shallow roots, how big a diameter of dirt I need to get with them.
So, Ron, I would shoot for the smaller stuff. I would be in that 2 foot and less. I think you're going to have a lot better luck. And personally, I would actually wait till next spring instead of doing it this fall. Fall with conifers is a lot harder to do, especially if you're going to be digging them up. And we're starting to get where it's getting colder. The temperatures are going to start dropping, even the soil temperatures. So I think you'd have better luck in the spring. But if you have a 1 to 2 foot, if you get at least a 12-inch ball, I think in most cases you're going to be okay. But the little bigger you can get, the better.
All right. Ron, yeah, thanks a lot for your call. A couple of email questions here to finish out the hour. From James in West Des Moines, we have a locust tree that's about 10 years old. The lower branches are getting onto the neighbor's garage roof and eaves. What time of the year should I cut those branches?
Well, as we said earlier, if you really want to promote wound response next June or so, but again, if you want to keep happy neighbors, it's okay to do it this winter. You're not going to kill the tree.
If there's external pressure.
Right. Yes. If there's external pressure, it's okay to do some pruning in the winter. We tend to avoid the spring and fall when we're under leaf color change, so we wait till things go dormant.
All right, and Patricia is on the line from Waverly. She has to cut some branches or dead branches off of a tree, and she was wondering what to use to cover the wound on the tree, but she doesn't need to do anything,
she
right?
She doesn't need to do anything. But if that is an oak, even dead branches, I would still wait for a couple good hard frosts before I did it. But if it's any other species, she can prune dead branches at any time.
All right.
No wound dressings needed.
And last question from Russ. I have two varieties of tomato plants that I've planted too close together. They provide plenty of tomatoes, and I water fully once per week. Should I do any other maintenance, such as trimming back branches that don't have fruit?
Typically, no.
All right. And this time of year, I mean, if they're producing, right, you just let them go.
Just let them go.
And wait for the frost. Keep picking regularly. All right. We are out of time. Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Mark Vitosh, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure.
Mark Vitosh, DNR Forester. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Dennis Reese, Caitlin Harrop, Rick Brewer, and Matt Alvarez. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm there at Charity Nebbe. We are all at Iowa Public Radio. You can find many of my colleagues there as well, including talk show producers. And you can also subscribe to our podcast so you never have to miss an episode of Talk of Iowa. Go to any site you use to subscribe to podcasts and search for Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa. Have a great weekend.